ouvert, mis à l'extrême, ça fait l'État, le communisme, l'individu n'existe pas, voilà. Donc on a vraiment des combats et des guerres de civilisation derrière ces deux termes. Et heureusement, avec beaucoup de chance et beaucoup de savoir-faire, on a une issue ici. On a si on pense l'artiste de la nation, c'est vraiment l'artiste qui dessinait les posters, les affiches de Hitler, un peu ça. Il faut voir d'où
Donc,
ça vient. Mais si on
d'où
pense.
ta réticence un peu
Oui,
à l'appeler national.
exactement.
La Journée nationale du taboulé est un bon exemple de ce que la Biennale de Paris, donc captée par Alexandre et dirigée par Alexandre, puisque ça devient une institution avec un directeur, va présenter. C'est ce type de manœuvre. D'autres manœuvres vont s'ajouter. Il y a donc une convergence et ça se passe à peu près au même moment, ces deux événements, en 2000. Le développement de la Biennale se poursuit entre 2000 et 2004 et se concrétise en 2004 avec la première édition de la Biennale. Enfin, pas la première, la 14e, puisqu'on reprend à partir de la dernière édition qui avait été en 1985. Et on arrive à la 15e Biennale de Paris qui, bien que toujours invisuelle, se concrétise, se matérialise dans un catalogue très important, qui a beaucoup circulé, qui a eu un impact très appréciable. Qui est encore consulté aujourd'hui comme un ouvrage de référence sur les pratiques immatérielles, sociales, l'art social, l'art invisuel, comme tu l'appelles, Alexandre Gurita. Je crois qu'on a fait un bon survol de cette aventure. Avant de terminer, Alexandre, qu'est-ce que tu pourrais ajouter sur la Biennale de Paris, ce qu'elle est aujourd'hui en 2016, 10 ans plus tard après l'apparition de ce catalogue, et ce qu'il va advenir de cette Biennale de Paris, dont les éditions se succèdent tous les 2 ans, bien sûr, mais sans exposition, sans œuvre, sans spectateur. Une biennale donc qui s'inscrit dans le réel, mais de manière cyclique, qui est ponctuée tous les 2 ans, en fait, sans qu'il y ait nécessairement même d'événements pour marquer cette
Bien sûr.
ponctuation. Donc, quel est le bilan entre 2006 et 2016, et quelle est la suite à prévoir pour la biennale de Paris?
Mais la biennale, elle est d'une certaine façon, pour dire en deux, trois mots, comme je le dis lors de mes conférences, c'est une stratégie mise à disposition des artistes désobéissant au régime normatif de l'art. Voilà, donc je pense que là, en 2016, après ces années de travail et de formulation, c'est devenu vraiment mon intention de départ. Mais ce qui est très difficile dans l'art, c'est d'avancer dans une direction où tu vois pas le cap, mais tu dois faire comme si tu as un cap, en fait. Et donc je pense qu'aujourd'hui, je n'ai pas imaginé en 2006-2016, mais je crois que là. Les très nombreux développements, projets, participations à la Biennale de Paris lui permettent aujourd'hui d'atteindre une sorte d'échelle opératoire qui peut, pour répondre à ta deuxième question, qui peut faire l'écart, qui peut, comme on dit parfois, bouger les lignes. Si la Biennale de Paris réussit dans les 53 prochaines années à venir, à modifier l'art, ne serait-ce que d'un centimètre, hein, alors c'est vraiment parfait. Et bah, ça conviendrait tout à fait à ma définition de l'artiste, qui est celle que l'artiste doit causer beaucoup de problèmes à ses contemporains et énormément à ses successeurs.
Alexandre Gurita, Ricardo Mbajo, merci infiniment pour cet entretien. Nous sommes à Beyrouth et il est 2h27 minutes. Nous sommes le 5 juillet 2016.
Et dans trois quarts d'heure, le
Le
taxi
4
arrive.
juillet. 4 ju Nous sommes à, ah oui, 4, pardon. Et dans 3 quarts d'heure, le taxi pour l'aéroport.
So thank you very much, Adina Baron, to be with us because we're on the radio now. So we'll say us.
I see. Okay. We'll be efficient.
Yeah, so you've been a performance artist since 1973, I see, in your documentation. That's a long way to go from 73 to 2019. Can you talk about how you started to make performance art, and you were living in Israel at that time, and you're still living there, Emma. So you started there, am I right?
You are right. I was a third year student in the Bezalel Academy of Fine Arts in Jerusalem. And it was a time of conceptual art and minimal art.
Yes.
And Israel, as it has been since and before, was in times difficult straits, security-wise. And at that time, all the teachers were men.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great presence of a sort of a mental masculine outlook, which was strengthened by the support of the international trend towards minimal art and conceptual art. There weren't even many painters in the school at that time. It seemed that everybody was only using their brain, not their emotions, not their passion. And even judging or teaching art seemed to very much be something very rational that was reflecting upon the history of art and judging things by comparing, which is very academic even today, an academic approach to refer the students always to what has been done, to other artists that have worked. And in this general atmosphere, that some of it was very typical of Israel, and it maybe also had the manifestations that were common with the whole world and with the trends of art of that time, I found myself very intuitively starting to sway in a new direction. Performance art was not a medium that was had even a name in Israel. And actually, it wasn't, I didn't even know by name what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I will start from, not from the beginning, I will jump a little bit and I will say, what I did was I put posters. It was a little school, Bezalel. It was a school for that accepted a few students out of many. It's actually the most oldest school. It's 110 years old in Israel. Israel is only 71 years old. But this is a story of itself. I had put in, I had put posters of a silk screen that I made in silk screen of my portrait smiling, and I put them in the car. It's an old building. It's not corridors like a big huge school. It's like a little villa. I put posters of me smiling and main venues in the little school, and under my portrait, my smiling portrait, I wrote at the yard at this hour and at these dates. It was I invited them for July, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, being a small school, everybody knew Adina Baron, and I was also very much a social being. I was very friendly. I had mingled intellectually with my colleagues. I was going to parties, so everybody could recognize this face on the poster. It is smiling face. It says, "Ah, Adina, what is she doing? What is she inviting us to?" Nothing was written about what I'm inviting them to. It didn't even say that it's an invitation. There was only my face as a portrait and a place to meet the yard, the backyard of the school, and a certain date and hour, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And people related and reacted to the fact that they knew this face and they knew this girl I was 21, and this and they like her and they respect her. So of course they will come respond to this poster. And this was, in retrospect, an invitation, but it wasn't an invitation of the usual kind. And looking back, it was very visual. It was what visual and social. People responded to it because it was a person, and it was a person that they knew, and it's a person that they liked socially. And it was, and it was visual. So you know, it was I didn't talk. There was no much television or not WhatsApp now. So it was like, will come, and it's also silk screen, so it's already playing with mediums of art, which I can say this in looking back. Then it was intuitive, and then they really appeared, all my colleagues in the backyard of Bezalel, and then I did the first performance, which I will tell you a little bit about. But what I'm trying to say, that already this invitation was a social, it had a social incentive, it had a social attraction, and it had a visual attraction. And that's like the two first steps of creating what would, in 1976, it was coined the name Meitzag, which is in Hebrew performance art. So it's visual and it's social. My work, you can read about it in my website, of course, and in the books that came out. But I also, in the performance, up to this day, I use my person in a very genuine way. At that time, there wasn't any words and no voice hardly. Through the years, I became more virtuoso. I developed more sides of my personality that I can use for the performance. But I started the performance, my friends, my colleagues, my teachers sat in chairs, and I came in from their back, from where they came in, which is sort of already an important point, though it sounds very trivial, that I appeared from where they had come from, and not from the front, not from behind, I don't know, a curtain, and not, I came from where they came, one-to-one, and I stood in front of them, of course, with no stage and no lighting. It was 5 o'clock, it was and the sun was setting, it's July, but it was like the end of a day. And I actually was greeting everybody, everyone. People knew me. I greeted with a smile, I greeted with a gesture, I greeted with a hand gesture, with a different motif of my face, not as a clown, not as a mask, not as, only as me. Someone I said, wow, you came, maybe said it softly, not any text, verbal text that is sophisticated, but very, very genuine, very, very personal. What happened is that people that had not been greeted yet or had been greeted already were looking at me visually with an expectation. Those that I hadn't greeted were expecting me to greet them and had a different sensation than those that I had greeted and those that I am greeting. A situation had occurred, a social situation. Again, they knew Adina, and the whole moment and the whole movement of saying hello was very visual, just like the silk screen, only it was live. And of course, as human beings are one to another, they were very, very attentive to the nuances and the changes in my gesture and to the validity of my behavior and to the tension and relief and expectation of what is going to happen.
I have a question about that. People at that time would maybe expect, as you mentioned, a more theatrical or thing, and what happened was real life. So were you already interested at that time merging the idea to merge life with art? Because in that case, life becomes art and art becomes life in that performance. Am I right?
Yes. What interested me, of course, we know that we are immersed with our sensitivity as human beings and artists into a general flow of awareness that is in the world or where you are. But what is very important to say that I was, first of all, preoccupied. I had not said it so clearly like I'm saying it now. Again, the exact words are actually quoted in two dialogues that were held with me by two prominent art curators and critics, and they are on the website, and the way I talk about it later. But what's important that this was a statement of a human being of the feminine kind. It was a statement being said in a macho environment, which was Israel, and maybe the world was generally that way too. You know, the place of women and the attitude towards women is changing not only in Israel but in the whole world. But I was living in Israel, and I was living in an army-oriented environment, and the teachers were men, and my intuition was creating a human situation in which one cannot only use his rational judgment about what is happening, but is using his total persona, his psychology, his education, his sense of fragility as a person, and feelings, expectations, a judgment in the sense of social inclinations, educational inclinations. What is she doing, this girl? Is she pretty? Is she not? What am I looking at? How do I feel about what she is doing? Is it real? Is it not real? Do I believe her? Will I go with her? Why is she this way to this person and this way to me? And all sorts of social, psychological questions which reveal a much broader realm of inclinations about a situation, and not only very rigid about concepts, concepts of art history. That's where I was actually breaking something and creating something that was not before.
Adina, what was the reaction of the people, of the teachers and of the other students to that?
It was very startling. My colleagues, I had done this performance, of course, performances are not, if they are working with real time and in real moments, I call it real time and real space, then they have their, they change. You know, we never hold exactly the same conversation twice. What I've said many times, I'm saying now differently. So I did it three times, but the school, first of all, brought the psychologist to see if I am in sound emotional state.
You mean after the performance?
For the next performance, the psychologist came. I had the privilege of the psychologist. And of course, he said that I have an amazing genius of, I don't know the word, of playing on people's consciousness and feelings. Okay. Playing on it, you know, like you play on the piano, touching it.
Okay.
And I'm very stable and smart. I had nothing derogative to say. My colleagues, especially one colleague, I have the letter that he wrote to me, wrote about the honesty, the integrity of what I'm doing, and even the delicate quality of it, you know, of going like on a thin line, you know, something very existential. And I got a letter from the school at the end of the year. I was supposed to graduate in the end of the fourth year. That's how long it takes to get a BA in Israel. I was in the end of my third year, and in the summer between the third and fourth year, I got a letter But if I want to graduate with a BFA, I was the first class that got a BFA, then I cannot do this, what I'm doing, because even if it's art, they're not sure it's art. And even if it is, there's nobody that teaches it in the school.
Indeed. Yeah.
So if I want to graduate, I can't do this. I can't graduate with such.
I see.
An expression.
I see. It's really interesting. You mentioned this question of authenticity somehow. Maybe it's not the word you use, but somehow this is close to what you described.
Integrity.
Yeah, integrity. But doing my research now for this research about artists who use public space without permissions, I've been reading a lot and interviewing many people. And I did realize that over the last few years, in most of the documentation I have, there's two tendencies. On one side, you have female performance artists who talk about integrity, but also authenticity. Many of them, Cosi Fanny Tutsi from Com Transmission here in Quebec, Sylvie Tourangeau, you talk about integrity. There's a lot of people a lot about it, and when I look at the male of the writings of the male performance artists, they talk about authenticity, not integrity, but authenticity. That it's not a thing that they say it's somehow an illusion. I'm talking about the guy who founded UbuWeb, Kenneth Goldsmith, who mentioned that in conferences, and I'm reading now Stuart Holm, the newest artist. So this guy thinks authenticity, this is what they use, the idea of authenticity in art is a vision of spirit, but it's not something that can be reached, and it's fake to pretend to be authentic. What can you respond to that? Do you have any thought about that?
Yes, of course. I'm not talking authentic, is especially today. I agree, is a difficult notion, politically, socially. You know, where do we begin? Where is our personality? If it has been done, if it's legitimate, does it matter if it's yours? What is yours? If it's, you know, I'm thinking even in politics, you know. Is Israel ours? Is it the Palestinians? Is the houses in Poland, the Jewish houses, who do they belong to now? You know, is my art affected? The word isn't affected. How am I, you know, influenced? Does it make it mine? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that the tools of my work are my person. My person physically, my sense of relating to people, my way of behaving, intermingling, not mingling, talking, creating a social situation. When I am performing, the people are part of a situation and they can relate to it in whichever way they want. And I usually, in my manner, can play with different approaches towards the people and the situation. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Towards the situation in which I evolve and create. And just like Brecht, you know, can create a feeling of estrangement and a feeling of catharsis. And if I go through different mediums, you know, of a more visual moment, a more moment that is less plastic, but maybe more conversation. If I create a moment where the audience is more with themselves than with me, the dynamics of the situation, which is live, I provoke it and I create it, but it's a real situation. And my behavior in that situation is authentic to me. It is I have created it, and it is built on my sense of judgment and my ethics and my my attitude towards people and my wanting to get something across, to get something across about being an individual, not me, about each of us being individual and each of us being a group, a part of a group, and all the conflicts that are personal and social and political that are in these situations.
Mm-hmm.
So authenticity is irrelevant. Authenticity isn't a value in itself. Yeah, we can. So many wars are held about if something is, if you are authentic, if this is authentically yours, how back, how much, to where do we have to go to prove authenticity?
Yeah.
I don't know if such a thing exists, but I can be honest about myself.
So it's more a question of honesty and integrity than authenticity. The authenticity is a consequence of honesty and integrity. I'm interested to jump from 1973, the year 2000s, when you did an action in Toronto, invited by Fado. And in this action, you went out in the streets. According to what Paul Couillard told me, you went in the middle of the highway with some objects and walked right there in the middle of the highway. You went to a church and you went inside the church and you used this space where the priest is usually talking. All that without permission. So it reminded me your early action of 73 where you put your pictures all around the building without necessarily asking the permissions. So in between these two actions during the 30 years of your career and work, you did many actions out in the street, and I'm particularly interested about them. How did you start to make street actions without permissions? When did it started to go out in the street and live the situation as real life and as an authentic experience, if I can use that word? When did it start?
First of all, I've been performing 46 years, but you're talking until 2000. Maybe the inspiration of this performance is important just to mention, and then you will understand why I performed it in the streets.
Yes.
This performance was called Disposition, and I started it in 1999 in Israel, and then I did it this performance until 2010. And in this performance, each time I was invited to a city, and I took 2 to 3 weeks to create the performance for certain route within a specific neighborhood within the city. And I would take the audience through this route. There would be a diverging and changing forms of communication with the group all the time, from leading them, from talking to them, from giving them instructions, from creating a vision, and the people that were part of this performance who had come felt their point of view, felt where they are standing, felt the others in the situation, felt the diverging and different possibilities of interpreting the situation, not only towards what I was doing, but towards in their own changing and fluctuating thoughts, and of course, towards the presence of the other people. I was wearing a red dress, so it always stood out in the landscape. And when I went very far, like the impressionist painting, the aesthetics of classical culture, visual culture, and today also textual culture, are always a part of my performance. It's just so the performance reflects about, like maybe like I talked in the beginning about 73 and my teachers and the way they taught in the academy. So we are artists and we have a dialogue, in a minute I will come back to this position. We have a dialogue with art history, and but we also have a dialogue with the real potent moments, social and political moments of our time. And in my performance, I play with it, I work with it. So my performance can look like a painting, can look like a moment, but then it also comes back, you know, it hits back as something that is not only removed or separating the viewer from the moment of art, but is sort of the moment forces itself into the viewer's consciousness, arouses questions, arouses what is my stand, not only visually, but consciously, what do I feel about it? What is my bias? But this performance came to me when I was watching television in 1988 and 89, right during the Yugoslavian war. And I was watching the long lines of wagons, women leading wagons with all the households and the children and the chickens and the old mother and father, and opposite them were long lines of ammunition and tanks and soldiers going the opposite way. And this vision of the woman holding together the core of the human situation, the family, and walking in one way, and the tanks and ammunition and the destruction and the metal and the wheels and the roads and the noises of vehicles on the opposite direction were actually left a strong impression. Of course, it wasn't strange to me. Sometimes you would have to watch something that's far away in order to come close. I was living, I was then living wars in Israel. And actually, I was living, this was not long after I left the village next to Lebanon on the Lebanon border, an Israeli village on the Lebanon border with my two children. And as I was going down the mountain, the Israeli soldiers were going in lines of trucks and tanks and up the mountain towards the Lebanese border. This was in 1980. So I'm talking about 1998, 1999, when I'm watching the Yugoslavian war, but actually not only I was had experienced this as a citizen of my country, but also more personally. And of course, I was also at that time nursing my husband, who was a casualty, and not of a war, but of the army. So this is where this performance was born. I had done it in Belfast, in Hong Kong, in Auschwitz, next to Auschwitz, in Helsinki, in Quimper, France, in Toronto, and about 10, 11 in Tel Aviv cities. And in each city, I brought the audience to places which they knew, and I created an awareness of the places, I think, from a new vision. And actually, I suggested and urged by my behavior the individual in the audience to think, to be aware of himself, of his own or her own inclinations towards the place where he or she lives, towards my attitude, towards the attitudes of those surrounding him, not only in thought, but in his movement, and his where he is standing, how he is looking, what is his angle, not only physical, but mental. My first performances that were site, well, the first performance was site-specific. It was in the backyard of Bitzelev. My performance, I always choose where I'm performing. Like the performances that I'm doing now, I'm performing it in a house that was Palestinian. in Jerusalem, and I'm performing it in Tel Aviv, in a place that was once a refrigerator for all the agricultural products, and it's a perfect place to put people who don't know where, who have been uprooted from their house, or refugees, or on the flux.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I have one question about that. Adina, when you perform it in different cities, they are all different. Helsinki is so different from Jerusalem and from Tel Aviv, and Toronto is very different too. How do you choose the place, and how do you use the space according to the differences of these different locations?
Yeah, well, it took me time in Toronto, in Cabbage Town. I was intrigued by the beautiful houses and the complacency and the quiet, the serene, supposedly, atmosphere in the aligned private houses, which each had a fence, and there was very, very clear, seemed to be very, very clear rules about what is private and what is public. Also, the signs on the streets were very, very clear. Actually, I remember that explicitly, but it sounds sort of not. Of course, signs are clear, but there was something about Cabbage Town that seemed that everybody is abiding by rules, and there's a really a sense of order. And I was going into the yards of people, and like I was this lady in red with a red piece on her head, like a fundamentalist lady, like the Yugoslavian ladies, like the Arab ladies, like the Orthodox Jewish ladies, a variation on that. And it created beautiful photos and pictures also to the audience live when I am just going into these places, walking through like the most beautiful Hollywood movie or some beautiful sets. And it's really a question of belonging. I'm arousing sense of what is belonging. Also aesthetically, if she looks good there, is this good? Is this the way? Is this just a beautiful moment from a film, from a fantasy, or is she really trespassing? Or do I really care? Because it's art, you know. In the name of art, we do all these bad things. And I also, it's very important, this performance is very relevant to your question. In every place I went to, I was with this red dress able to stop traffic, permit my audience to cross everywhere. And again, this red lady, I'm younger there, and quite outstanding. And she is able to maneuver the situations with her being aesthetically present, beautiful, red. And it's also something about survival, because I did all these things that could be so dangerous. And I even, all of you are walking after me. I am sometimes like a guide, sometimes like a friend, sometimes like a picture. In every city, different situations occur. Of course, I relate in. I remember in Hong Kong, I go into the temple, and this white woman is behaving as if she's Chinese or Hong Kong. Excuse me, the Hong Kong people don't like to be called Chinese. And they permitted me, and it was like a picture from a kid Hollywood movie. And everybody abided for it. And I'm asking all the time, aesthetics, it's beautiful, it's powerful, it's strong. You know, this is what we want to see in art. But is it good? What is she doing? What are the rules? Does this the way life goes in art, as in life, as in our social law and our political? These are very, very important questions, which I arouse, of course, in many, many, many ways, diverse ways, each time in a different way. Of course, in this performance, each time in a different city, with the situation, with my intuition, towards the characteristics of the city by being there 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks before I create the performance, going in the streets, learning them, deciding what the route will be, and looking at the sites, looking at people, and then really creating. You are right, I am creating here a performance without really getting permission. But the idea is not to do something against the law. I'm not doing really anything. Only once I remember that something happened. It was really in Toronto. I don't know what I did. It was something completely unimportant. And so I'm not naughty or, you know, like some performance artists would do. I'm sweet, I'm kind, I'm considerate, but I am going on borders. I'm asking borderline questions. I'm asking questions about what belongs to who? What do we relate to? Mm-hmm. What do you relate to? What does she relate to? What do I relate to? Is trespassing a word? What is mine? What is yours? What are your thoughts? What are my thoughts? How do we become, what is being individual, authentically individual, yeah, real, yeah. What are you? Are you part of the group? And I really legitimize the fact that we are all different.
When you do these actions, you move. You move, the audience move with you. And while you do the actions, there's a concentration, a specific concentration, a specific type of presence that we get when we are in the action of performing, of doing a performance as performance artist. And I was wondering, did you ever experience what we can call in psychology transpersonal experiences during that time, like specific state of mind, altered state of mind, visions, special intuitions or synchronicities that were really strong and happened while you were doing that?
I don't think in those terminologies. I know that I am told that, I'm even saying it from the outside, that it's amazing how much I'm concentrated because I'm really creating the moments. And I'm very, very, very attuned to the people who are, I wanted to say, performing with me, to my audience. And in my last performance, if you're looking, soon there will be more photos. But I actually, I move each time with another person from the audience and put them on the floor. It looks like an area of sleeping or dead people or casualties or many, many associations. And with each person, I move differently, and I'm very attuned, and people don't say no to me. The question arouses, when we talk about it afterwards, that should they object, shouldn't they object? What do they do when their faces to the floor and they want to see what's happening, even though they hear me all the time? But they adhere, they cooperate. The performance is something very, very special to me. When I was young, I felt that those were the moments that I was 100% Adina. Today, the biggest compliment I've been told, actually, in recent days, because I'm doing my new performance, which isn't really so new anymore, it's coming to its end of its performing sessions. I've been told, Adina, you seem to be so totally real in your performance. You don't do anything very dramatic. You are not dramatizing anymore. You aren't making these big movements anymore. You seem to be so real, so genuine, and yet you touch us. And then I am surprised, because every time when I finish a performance, I think it's probably lousy, and that nobody really got anything out of it. It's not a matter of enjoyment. It wasn't meaningful. And then I realized that people see the nuances. They see the minute movements. They see the small changes in expression. Of course, I am aware of them, and I am totally flowing with them. I'm not going to use the word control because it's not artificial, but I am in a state of making love, you know? I'm genuine. I am trying to get across, to moments that I think are not enough present in one's life, in people's life. And I try to cross back and forth the undefined lines of individuality and group, and to actually say that differences are welcome, and they what make the group rich, and ability to and the groups that enable the group to grow and to evolve and to be rich and to be creative and to solve conflict, not in the sense that make differences disappear, but in the sense that make differences contribute and be a healthy component of a social situation.
Would you agree to use the idea that there's a, what you are talking about right now is something related to a spiritual experience? Would you use that term?
I don't know. Somebody said in a beautiful discussion we had about, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago after the performance, somebody was saying something about, and young people have said I'm like a shaman, but I never think of, I can't even finish the sentence, yeah?
Yes.
But I am 67 years old, and I am doing it for 46 years, and I do have a mission, and I do it with all my heart, and it's my life's endeavor, and it's true that I move people in many ways, also physically. I started to say move people, I was thinking of the physicality of it, but it's also making them aware and move them out of their comfort zone and make them think. I do that, but I do it in with a lot of. I don't do it like you said trespassing. I do it with a lot of respect and gentleness, and but not. And at the same time, I am, with all this, I am getting across or creating a new, evolving new situations that are thought-provoking. Mm. So I don't, you see, a second time that you suggested me certain terminology, which I never thought that is relevant to me, because I so much working through my own self, that it's not about comparing it to terms and the trends that exist outside of me, even though I do use the word political, individual, and social on and on again and again.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because there's a certain dimension of biographical elements in your work, even though they're not mentioned directly, but when you mention about your husband, about the living conditions in Israel, which is at war, the relationship between the different communities within the state of Israel and what is happening there. I think you carry this in your performance. When you go somewhere else in the world, you carry this, and then you find different ways to think about these issues. Would you agree with that?
In the performance, it only changes in the fact that I am never in the same day that I was before. And that my audience will always be other people, that also, even if it's the same people, which doesn't usually happen, they are also in a new day, in a new moment. I think that... by the way, my performance is, I started with my first performance and I talked about war. I was not a widow of war until 7 years ago. So really the subject of, or the attitude of a woman is an attitude that evolved. And first I was a young woman and now I am an elder woman. and the subject. So that's like, you know, I said, you know, the attitude of the teachers, of the men around me, and of art. You know, I came from a, now from a point of view of a woman's way of thinking, you know, that isn't only from your shoulders up, but also involves your stomach, your emotions, your educational inclinations. You can't say this is good, this is beautiful. Many, many other things come into your judgment. So this started really from the first performance. And yes, I go everywhere, and in everywhere that I perform, people identify. When I, in this position, when I'm talking about when we first got married, we lived in Baca, you know, I can go through the most fancy neighborhood, maybe in Toronto or in Quimper in France or wherever, or in the most devastated, burned down neighborhood in Belfast. And I said, when we first got married, we lived in Baca. Baca was an Arab village before the war. I love the Arabs' way, and then I start laughing. I love the Arabs' way. I love the Arabs' way of building. And this is so typical, you know, that what I love the Chinese way of this, I like this. It's so remote. It's so, you know, what you like isn't personal. I'm questioning. You like to live in the houses that were built by the Arabs, and you love the architecture, you like the hummus, I don't know. You like, but what about relationships? What about real, hardcore, personal relationships? And then I can go through a neighborhood that is not Baca, you know, in Toronto, and say this text. Now, everybody will relate, yeah, to my story, because there's always talking about authenticity. We talked about, is this neighborhood, okay, it wasn't Arab, but what was it before, and who lives here, and is the population changing? Was it once black? Is it now Muslim? Who does it belong to? So you see these little stories that sort of only seem to only come from me actually resonate as a symbolic story that everybody can identify and relate to through his own story, his own sense of belonging. Also, you know, sacrifice is a voice work. It actually is all gibberish, but you understand that it's a lady that is telling about her baby that's born, and the man that is he's singing it like a march. Yeah, I play with many voices and many sorts of sounds, and the baby crying, and she's hysterical. Apparently, her child is dead, and I'm talking about how we women send our men to die for. Yes. Causes that are not legitimate, you know.
Yes.
We die for territory, die for ideology, and we don't have to die for anything. We just have to be human beings that support each other, our spouses, our children, our family, our friends, and create a healthy society. And when I'm singing the sacrifice, singing, whatever you want to call it, using my voice, and no understandable words, but voices and situations, and everybody identifies with it, you know. And Palestinians think I'm talking about their losses, and the Jews think I'm talking, the Israeli Jews think I'm talking about their losses. And when I did it in Russia, they totally identified that. You don't have to know that I'm Israeli. It's irrelevant. I'm a human being. I'm coming from a place of strife, but we all fear, we all know, and we all, and some of us experience it. Mm-hmm. It's really not about war, what I'm talking about.
Yes, this
I'm
is
I'm talking
clear.
About what, about life, about the human community, about.
That's clear, yeah, clearly. My last question, Adina Baron, would be about what doing these series of actions in public space that you call disposition, how did it change you? What happened inside of you after all these experiences, and how is it different from the experiences performing in the gallery? How specifically the fact that you worked in public space changed something in you or transformed you? as a person and as an artist?
Well, I've performed so many works in public spaces. You know, I've created a work in the Olive Grove that was once Palestinian. I just now created a few years. My last work was a work that I did in a shelter, which is a public space, which is actually the municipality. We had to keep it a secret. Now that you evoked me in this question of doing things that I do not get permission, you're right. I'm not preoccupied with it. The municipality would not have given me permission to give a performance in a shelter, in a public shelter. But I did it. I did 12 performances there. How it changed me, I don't know to answer these questions. I'm changing all the time. I'm growing old. And maybe I'm getting wiser. I hope so. Many things happened in these performances, but many things happen in every performance, because if it's not, it's always a space, it's a human space, it's a civilization space. Maybe it's, I don't know, if you are insinuating it, there's something. I actually said it before, it's about borders. You know, it can be physical borders, it could be social borders, that are social, that are political, that are personal, about what are borders for us as human beings, you know, also emotional borders, borders that we, what is, borders do we permit ourselves to trespass, what we don't, what's permitted for you, what's permitted for me. It's about emotions also as borders, and maybe that's what is my great infatuation with usually less, hardly. In the past years, I never perform in a place that is neutral. Even if I'm going abroad with the performances I created here, I will have to make sure that the space is suited for the performance. And I will need a few days at least to adjust to the space, so that it serves my statement, so that the resonance of my voice, I know it well physically, that my movement suits it, that my behavior suits, that I know where my audience will be situated or move. And when I'm talking about movements and to be attuned to a place, I'm not talking about, first of all, physically, and then mentally and socially, so that the place is a place. You know, in Hebrew, there's a word for place, which also is sacred. The place where God resides. Place is where God resides. And so you asked me about spirituality. I don't think that I'm spiritual. I mean, in the religious sense, and I don't know, you can tag me in whatever you want, but the place is sacred. Once we, family is sacred, the home is sacred, the place where I will perform will be meaningful, has to be meaningful, has to be made meaningful, so that we can make meaningful, that we can have meaningful, suggestive thoughts and transitions within our awareness of ourselves when we are there.
So that means when you have a specific work and you want to perform it somewhere else, sometimes you have an idea in advance when you go there, but sometimes you probably go there and you still have to research while you're there on that ground in that specific
place. Yes, and it's
place.
Happened to me a few times that I came to the space and the performance wasn't good.
So you had to change.
I wasn't able to do what I wanted because I could not adjust to the situation.
So what did you do?
I gave a bad performance.
Oh, and you could not,
what,
like,
I would call a bad, yeah, what I would call a bad performance. I wasn't, you know, it's like a teacher coming to teach, and the age group of the people that came to hear her lesson, to be in her lesson, are not the right age group. What you have to teach doesn't fit them, and they don't have a place to sit, or they don't see the teacher. I mean, all sorts of things that make the situation impossible.
Yes, I see.
It's happened. Not often. I can think of one time that it happened in Madrid. It was really very, very frustrating.
And you cannot change when you do that. You cannot say to the organizer, oh, this space doesn't work for that piece. I need another space. I would like.
Actually, it happened also in Singapore. I remember the performance wasn't so good because it didn't suit. First of all, not always. Not because I am the kind of a Dina, I always try. It might take me time to realize that I just cannot work there. I think that today I would be more quick in understanding that it's impossible, and I would say it cannot work. But I think that maybe in past years, you know, I would still believe that I can adjust to the performance until I did it not to my satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, things like that can happen in relating to, but it happens less and less, or it hasn't happened lately.
Good. Well, thank you so much, Adina Baron.
Thank you very much, Eric. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.